since our last session, I've been thinking quite a bit about it. And also, as I've been reviewing some notes, the emphasis on moving to normalization in the period prior to my first going to China was, these notes tell me, stronger than my memory was earlier saying. One of the advance team brought me a personal note from Dick Holbrook, and I hunted for that note, and I can't find it, in which he said that, that contrary to his and my expectations, the proposal that the Secretary would bring to present to the Chinese included an official presence, a continuing official presence on the island, on Taiwan, after normalization. That prompts my memory to say that the discussions we had prior to my leaving, that we had accepted that there could not be a consular office, or there couldn't be a liaison office, or anything else. And of course, that in fact is what happened. Of items that the Secretary presented to the Chinese included the need, because of our numerous ties, for an official presence. I guess was first made known to the Chinese in the Secretary's meeting with Foreign Minister Huang Hua, which took place on the day of his arrival.
Second meeting.
It took place at the second meeting.
Second meeting. The first meeting was devoted, as I recall, to global review.
You're right.
Here's what I, to start the juices flowing a little, what I remember, and I coincides with what you have said, that the approach which we adopted was considered by us to be a very serious approach. It would have been even more serious had the signing of the Panama Canal Treaty not intervened between the time that the basic cast of the Vance meeting was set and the precise formulation of his talking points. I believe that you left Washington either after the Panama Canal Treaty had been signed, or at least before the full domestic ramifications of that signing had been absorbed and appreciated by the administration. We could check our dates, obviously, to nail that down. Had that not intervened, I believe that...
I think it was before.
The signing was before.
The emotional reaction certainly was not...
So what had been absorbed domestically was not understood, because I remember discussing with Vance on the plane out what he thought the implications of the Panama Canal Treaty were. He said it meant that we could not really address the normalization issue until after the treaty was ratified. one would have to ask Vance, and I want to ask him that in the course of this interview series, whether his inclusion of the phrase that you mentioned here, that we would want an official presence in Taiwan after normalization, wasn't added knowing
be a stumbling block.
That he needed to have, you know, he had to build in some time. But you remember that session was in the guest house.
The next morning, right?
And I remember looking across the table, and what was important about that session was that it was the first time since resumption of talks with the Chinese, I mean, since 1971, that an administration had told the Chinese, we are prepared to normalize relations with Taiwan. They had not been told that before.
You don't think they were told that in December 75?
No. That's what I would have sensed in 75, is to say we would be prepared to normalize in the second term.
Well, in the event of my
re-election
in my own right.
That's right, in re-election. But it was
It
was put to the future. And then...
an administration saying that we're ready to do it.
Now.
Now, in this term.
That's right. That was the...
What's your memory of Wang Hua's reaction?
Passive.
That's my memory of it. That the sharp no came from Deng Xiaoping.
From Deng Xiaoping. But
why do you think that was? Was he holding it back for the man, or somewhat taken by surprise.
Taken by surprise. And I think, A, taken by surprise, and B, I do not think he understood what had been said. You will remember that Secretary Vance's style of presentation was terse. He read from note cards,
right,
and did not deviate by a sentence. And the Chinese had to take rapid notes. You will remember that there was some concern as to whether they even translated it correctly.
Right.
Did you know that we came with a joint draft communique?
Don't think I did, no.
That was held with...
Yes, we showed it to you.
We showed you the joint.
Right.
There were only three copies in existence. Vance had one, I had one, and one stayed with Dr. Brzezinski. And his instructions were that if he felt it appropriate, he could table the communique. And in my mind, the sequence of events, there are two things that I recall. One was the Panama Canal Treaty, I think building some margin into the presentation. And then the second was Wang Hua's first session. The first session did not go well. The chemistry was not there, and Wang really lectured Vance.
It never did go well between those.
No. And you remember, though, that Huang really lectured Vance and about the polar bear. It was very tough against the Soviets. And that chilled the second session. Were you with us on the bridge? We went probably one of the bug bridge. You remember we went, that's when we talked, I remember we talked about that. You were there. We went because you had read that draft communique. And then we walked down the road to the famous bridge where everyone stops to talk.
Probably
Buck. The most confidential conversations over this bridge with a directional microphone. And I remember you being there.
Yes, I was there.
And we said, well, the next session will be the bilaterals, and we will talk about normalization, should you table the communique. And the decision was made at that point not to do so.
Now, this bridge session was after the morning meeting.
That's
at the
right.
Guest house.
That's right.
Before we went to the Sichuan restaurant.
That's right.
The Secretary wanted some hot food.
That's right. Exactly. And
now, it was in that session that my memory says Bill Habib was so optimistic.
Yes, I was too.
Were you?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering what the optimism was based on. Not that there were negative reactions, there weren't any reactions of any kind.
Well, my optimism, that was my first session with the Chinese. Bill Gleistein was not optimistic, by the way. I remember that.
Yeah, right.
But I, at that time, really did not know how to evaluate a Chinese reaction. And I thought that I thought that they understood the seriousness of our intent and that the objective of our mission was to communicate that seriousness, not the details. Question of whether they understood that this was an administration that was going to normalize relations with them.
Well, I think when one looks at the whole atmosphere of that visit, that objective was accomplished, I think. Marred by the subsequent business of the reference to the flexibility of the Chinese at Andrews and so on.
Well, I have asked the Chinese about that. That was not their impression. None of them came away from those meetings thinking that this administration was going to normalize. They found it discouraging.
I see.
Ji Chaozhu told me that this summer.
Yeah, when we met with Deng Xiaoping the next day in the afternoon, he set a step backward and was very sharp. Yet the dinner we had out of the Summer Palace that he hosted that night, that's where I got the impression that the setting the relationship back on track had been accomplished, because that was a very warm, intimate dinner. The atmosphere was really great. I felt very comfortable about that. And of course the final meeting with the foreign minister on the final meeting, again out at the guest house, was very short, nothing to be done, which would underscore what you're saying, that they felt that this was one more useless trip.
I suppose that go through for my notes here, and I think we should have it on the record of precisely the sequence of meetings then.
Okay.
Vance arrived on
Monday, August 22, in the late morning. He went directly to the guest house, if you remember. This was during the time of the mass demonstrations to celebrate the ending of the Party Congress. So the masses were out in the street. We went down Chang'an, they were drawn up. There were tens of thousands of them, mm-hmm. particularly in the square in Tianmen. The army and the navy and the air force were all drawn up. Said to the secretary, "This was for your benefit." Of course, the masses being out was not for his benefit, but the fact the masses were there during the lunchtime, that was deliberately arranged, because normally between about 11:30 and 2:30, there would not be many people around, and this would have been about 12:30. And the first meeting was with Wang Huang at the Great Hall at 4 o'clock that same day, and lasted to just about 6:30. And you're right, that was the Tour de Horizon. And then that night, the welcoming banquet at the Great Hall, in which the atmosphere was just the normal politeness. Then the next day, Huang Huang came out to the guest house, and the meeting was held at 9:30, and lasted the long recess just before noon. And then there was the lunch, where we went to the Sichuan restaurant, and then some of us visited the historical museum at 3 o'clock. Then the secretary, this is on Tuesday the 23rd, came out to the residence to meet all the staff, which was very good. And that was at 5 o'clock, and stayed behind, and we had a smaller dinner for the official party of the residence. That night it was an acrobatic display, which was a relief, because that was still the time of the revolutionary operas, but at least we were spared that. And the next morning, Wednesday the 24th, another meeting at the Great Hall, but with Wang Hua still. That started at 9:30. Recessed at 12:10. Then my notes show at 12:30 a caucus in the guest house garden. That would have been, I think, the bridge session, right?
That must have been it. That, so that we reviewed the totality of the Huang Hua discussions.
In preparation for meeting Deng Xiaoping later that afternoon.
That's when it was decided then not to table the draft communique.
Right.
It turned out, however, that the first communique that we sent you in October was very much that communique. In October of 78. I got it out of my files, reworked it a little.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we had lunch still at the guest house, and went at 3 o'clock to the Great Hall by the pictures with Jung, and then went into a meeting that lasted from 3:05 to 5:30. We went straight from that meeting to the Summer Palace for a tour and a boat ride and dinner at 7. Then on Thursday the 25th, another meeting at the guest house with Wang Huang. Started at 9:30 and was through at 10:02.
That was the bilaterals, if you remember, on cultural exchange, student exchange, laying of hands on the National Committee, the National Trade Council.
Would there be a communique? And communiques are not always necessary, said the foreign minister. And we had some sidebar meetings. 1985 went to the Great Hall for the meeting with the chairman and the premier, Walter Bung. That lasted from 505, and the meeting till 610. If you remember, Ma just gave a monologue. In fact, if
I did not attend, I saw the.
He just gave a monologue. It's almost as though he learned the piece by rote. And if the secretary hadn't interrupted him, I think he would have just finished it and got up and said goodbye and gone. But the secretary finally broke in and interrupted him and had some, not very much, but some two-way dialogue.
Now, was that your first meeting with Deng Xiaoping?
Yes, yes. Now, that's the first time I saw him. Then that night, Thursday night, we had the farewell banquet at 7:30. And the next morning, went out to the airport, and the party left at 10 o'clock.
I remember the reporting tables from the meetings, which again, Al Romberg and Dick Holbrook and I drafted. Al was on a trip, and I don't remember whether it was Thayer or Stapleroy. One of the two came, the other stayed home. I don't remember which of the two. And those reports were all rather upbeat.
Yes.
In fact, even the reporting cable after Deng Xiaoping's was upbeat, saying that we thought that we had initiated the process that would lead to normalization and that we had accomplished what we had come to accomplish. It was on the basis of those cables that Zbig did two things I have subsequently learned. One was that after the first cable, he went into the president, his memoirs are, that he's now writing, state, he went into the president and said that now that the full presentation has been made and the Chinese had not responded negatively, that a cable should
they
be...
they had responded negatively.
No, that they had not responded
right,
negatively. That the president should cable Vance to go ahead and table the communique. Brzezinski felt that without that cable, it was not going to get tabled. And the president refused to do that.
Why did he do that?
I don't know. Perhaps I'd have to go back on Zbig's memoirs. I think Zbig says that he consulted with Hamilton, and they just felt they could not take on another issue.
I see.
But that is something I have to check with Carter on. The second thing, the most unfortunate thing that happened, it was one of the few leaks from Zbig's staff, but I've traced it down, is that Zbig gave, at that point, and he did the rest of his time, he had a weekly meeting in which he summarized everything that was going forward for the entire staff. And he said to the staff that it looked like the meetings in Peking were going fairly well, and that the Chinese were demonstrating, and he used the word flexibility or something like that.
This is big.
It's big. John Wallach, who was a correspondent for
the Hearst Press,
then saw Sam Huntington. I didn't learn this until 1980, what the source of the story was, and Sam let the cat out of the bag, and that was the basis of the Wallach story. And I guess that came to Vance's attention as we got on the plane to go to Tokyo.
While he was still in Peking?
Yes, he got it in his batch of cables. While he was either in Peking or as he left Tokyo.
I think it was as he left Tokyo.
Okay. as he left Tokyo. Then we cabled you from Alaska because he was livid. I'll tell you one thing. I was glad I was on the plane because they didn't think that I was the source of the leak. And he thought that the word flexible having appeared in the Boston Globe, the Chinese would immediately
notice. Boston Herald American.
Boston Herald American. That the Chinese would immediately pick it up. And he felt everything that he had accomplished, and he felt good about the trip. He felt he had not focused on the official business at all. He felt that everything he'd accomplished was going to be undercut with this press report. So as I recall...
Was that a Sunday?
Well, it would have been... we left on what day?
Friday morning.
Friday. We stayed in Tokyo one night, as I recall. He reported on his trip in Tokyo. So, yes, it would have been a Sunday by the time you crossed the date line. Well, it should have been a Sunday, Sunday.
Saturday, probably. Because
Saturday.
Instruction to go in and tell the Chinese, pay no attention. The Boston Herald American.
Yes, but it was the Boston Herald American. That's the Hearst paper in Boston.
I think it was Saturday afternoon, because I did not get very high-ranking people to talk to, and they didn't know what I was talking about, because I'm explaining that this newspaper, which is not a very prominent or certainly not a major newspaper, and this person doesn't know what he's talking about, but I was instructed, I think, to deny it everything. I think my going in and talking like that just excited suspicion. It didn't lay any fears.
I was against that KIK, but it doesn't matter who was against or who was not, but there was an extraordinarily extended discussion on the plane of whether to send you instructions to go in or not. The plane psychology, you were lucky, having been based in Peking, not to have experienced what might be called plain psychology and plain decision making. It is something unique in the U.S. government that you get 8-10 people and they get on the plane and they're all hyperactive people anyway, and it's impossible to travel for that distance and not come to some decision in the course of the trip, and you know, the desire to do something, and absent any information, so that imagination soars. We had, this strays on trip business, but I remember on the Mondale, was it the Mondale trip or one other, someone got a CIA latest intelligence on Sino-Vietnamese relations or on Vietnamese military policy. And we had all the talking points carefully crafted, and then the guy walks on board the plane with the latest intelligence cable, and for the next 3 hours we were discussing whether this cable necessitated total rewriting of the script. It's a phenomenon. And that's what happened in this particular case.
Well, I remember going in and they were really mystified. In my memory, too, my session with the AP board was much closer in time than it actually was. Actually, I didn't see the...
That's with Dunn, the famous interview with Dunn. It came about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, didn't it?
It was on Tuesday, September 6th. So that it...
2 weeks.
It's 11 days after the party had left. 10 days after I talked to the Chinese, the AP group came out to the residence for a reception. It was at 8 o'clock at night. As you know, normally they're their chairman.
Kay Graham was on that.
Kay Graham was on. Punch Sulzberger was on.
It's a high-powered trip.
The Chicago Tribune, top-ranking person. One publisher from Nebraska, I think it was Nebraska, who had quite a bit of mouth tie, obviously. He was sitting next to me.
Missouri.
Missouri, was it?
Mexico City, Missouri.
Why don't we buy the island? Let's get rid of it. But what happened was, we were just sitting around socializing, having a couple of drinks, and I see Keith Fuller going from one person to another. And finally, he says, "Mr. Ambassador, did Secretary Vance propose to the Chinese the establishment of the liaison office in Taiwan?" Of normalization of relations with the PRC. And I said, no, he didn't. And he then said, that's strange. Deng Xiaoping told us in the meeting we had with him, I think they'd gone from that meeting to dinner and then to the residence. Told us that he had, and that's why the meeting, the mission was unsuccessful. Well, at that point I was not going to continue in my flat denial. I said something to the effect that, well, there were certain necessities outlined because of our much different situation with regard to the island and Japan that would be needed that could let the Chinese conclude that's what we were proposing. But it wasn't in bare terms the liaison office. And then they told me that they had caucused before they came and they were not going to tell me anything. What Keith Fuller was doing, going around, don't you think we should ask him? Then we had quite an extensive discussion of it. That, of course, wasn't put to rest until about a month later. Wong Wong and Cy Vance in New York at the UN.
Deng was quite vituperative, as I recall, in more than one session. He had an AP meeting and then he had one other because we began to go back to him and say that his remarks were really hurting things, as I recall.
Yeah. There was more than one reference after the AP board, this session with the AP board.
And then we began to get intelligence reporting concerning how their officials were being briefed about the trip. Well, what has to be, you are quite right in asking about 1975. Deng's position, of course, was correct. It was a step backward. I mean, in the sense that the Ford administration had said that the Japanese formula provided an adequate framework.
Right.
That has never come out publicly, shall we say. that had been committed.
No, as a matter of fact, President Ford publicly said that the most that he promised that it would be given consideration. And the Chinese never made publicly at least an issue of that, never referred to it with me at all. I suppose because they figured what difference did it make.
But it was a step back, and in that sense, I think that the Chinese, why the Chinese were disappointed, was the realization that had Ford been in office, they would have expected an American government to have done more than what we had done at that time. So it was a...
Tell me again how this business of... the Hearst man came about?
Brzezinski, at a staff meeting, summarized what...
Used the word flexibility.
Probably used the word flexibility. Whether he used the word flexibility, I do not know, but I do know that Huntington used it.
He was then a staff member.
He was then a staff member on the NSC. And the sourcing was to the White House.
Right. Now, what was it the president said at Andrews when he welcomed the secretary back?
Progress has been made.
Right.
Successful trip.
Well, that would have been when?
That Saturday afternoon.
Well, you wouldn't have been back in Washington that fast.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, it
was,
we recovered the day, so we took off early on a Saturday morning, I think, and came back Saturday, one straight stretch from Japan.
I got that table early in the morning, so I must have been in Peking on Sunday morning that I got it, I think.
Well, I know the instructions were... decision was made to send the cable while we were on the plane, and if you got it on a Sunday, then it was still Saturday. We sent it from Anchorage to, perhaps from Anchorage to Washington and back, but I remember the decision was made on the plane, and before we ever arrived, the message went out. But I do believe we helped create the tempest in the teapot. I think it was probably a mistake to have sent you in.
I got it very early on a Sunday morning, I think, because it was very difficult reaching the
from
Chinese.
From Tokyo. So then we did it when we left Tokyo.
Right. Very difficult reaching the Chinese. And... by the time I met with them, what the president had said on greeting the party was already public knowledge.
Yeah, so it would have been sent. The timing is probably to Washington and back. Well,
of course, further excited suspicion, I would think, as they reviewed it.
Well, it confirmed the what we had been, in a sense, said to... It confirms Biggs' briefing, in effect, would be my guess. Let me ask you, though, the question in retrospect, even if our position had been what Ford might have done, and we really don't know what he would have done, were the Chinese prepared to move ahead at that
time? I don't think so. I think whenever we talk and think about this, we assume the Chinese were always ready. I don't think they were.
Deng had just returned.
I think that events later, Deng had just come back. He by no means had a secure place. But what further, I think, made them desire to strengthen the American connection was going on in Ethiopia, the collapse of the forces of the Ogaden, what was going on in Eritrea. These events taking place afterwards, the
That's
murder
right.
within 24 hours of the two presidents in the Yemens, and the further deterioration in Vietnam, I think all of these help crystallize it.
That's terribly important. I agree. The setting was not propitious at that time.
No, I think the Chinese well could have accepted that and then dug in and made our position extremely difficult, if not impossible. Okay. So maybe it's fortuitous that, for whatever reason, that word was put in.
Yes, that's how I would read it. That.
Oh, and also the coup in Afghanistan didn't take place until April of 78.
There are a whole series of developments. Well, one can say, too, that American policy toward the Soviet Union had not yet become clear, and it was therefore not clear in Chinese minds what they were buying from a closer connection with the United States. One other part of the Vance visit where my memory is not clear. You will recall in Vance's talking points that we indicated we were interested in normalizing relations with Vietnam, and that this was part of our foreign policy. Do you recall their reaction?
As I remember it, it was House and Senate, well, that's your business, but it was clear they were cool to it.
But one did not come away at that point with a deep sense of foreboding as to the future of Sino-Vietnamese relations. At least I don't recall us sensing that the relationship was destined to be a very strained one, and that in some sense we'd have to choose between one or the other.
No, I think that's correct. I think if anybody would have forecast that at that point, he would have been discounted 100%.
Yeah. So it would have been pride of place.